Chapter 2. Stay. 2. Stay. Being the second of three critical commands that should be taught as part of a dog, or Angel Wolf Boy's, basic training. Jupiter came out of the bathroom in the penthouse apartment, rubbing the feeling back into her knees, and would have had a heart attack if she hadn't already been kidnapped, fallen off a building, fallen off a burning human gene refinery on her namesake planet, hadn't seen her mother almost eviscerated by some nightmare machine, basically hadn't seen half the crazy shit that had been thrown at her a month ago. Kane was dangling upside down outside the huge floor-to-ceiling windows which illuminated the main living area. His boots hooked on some contraption out of sight above them. His wings were at half-mast, not fully clamped down on his back, but folded enough so they wouldn't create unwanted wind drag, and he had his arms crossed over his chest. Jupiter wanted to press her face up against the window and demand to know what on earth was going on. He'd never intruded on her normal time before, but patiently waited for her at the appointed place and time. Except that her mother was also in the room, her back blessedly turned to the window. "You finished already, Jupiter?" she asked, and Jupiter had the presence of mind to rip her eyes off the 6 feet of black leather-wearing Angel Wolf boyfriend thing hanging outside the 50th floor window and give her mom a tired smile. Then, in a burst of inspiration, she said, "Yeah, actually. Want me to make a start on the master bedroom?" "I'll go make a start on the master bedroom." She grabbed the caddy and snagged the vacuum as she spoke, and dragged the whole lot swiftly around the corner and into said bedroom, which also had floor-to-ceiling windows, and happened to be deserted. By the time she shut the door and leaned her back against it, breathing out in relief, Kane was there. Of course he was. He'd heard every word she'd said, thanks to his augmented ears. So Jupiter didn't bother to raise her voice. In fact, she spoke quietly so no one else would hear. When she said, "What's going on, Kane?" Kane gave her a helpless, long-suffering sort of look. Then he tapped the side of his head with one finger and mouthed the words, "Call me," with careful exaggeration. He'd given her what he called a calm button, but looked more like an angular metal earring with a tiny bead on a fine silver wire. The bead went into your ear, and the ring bit hung off the shell. It was meant to be worn around the clock. Kane explained that he and Stinger, as legionnaires, both had theirs implanted. But Jupiter found it ticklish just enough to be impossible to sleep in, and she forgot it more often than not. By a stroke of luck, however, the last time she'd torn it out in frustration, she'd stuffed it into the breast pocket of the cotton shirt she was currently wearing. So she pulled the little thing out, clipped the metal to her ear, and with a shiver, tucked the tiny bead inside. She touched the external square of metal, activating the holographic interface, and selected the profile marked Kane. "I'm sorry," his voice spoke, close and intimate, as though he were speaking directly into her ear. Which he was, in a way. The sound quality was remarkable. There were no external artifacts, no wind bluster or ambient noise, and no static. It made Jupiter feel slightly disoriented. "Sorry for what?" she asked, trying to remember if she'd done something, or asked him to do something, that could possibly have given him a chance to make a perceived mistake, other than potentially blowing his cover in the most spectacular fashion possible. "I didn't know how else to attract your attention," he explained. "You didn't have your button on." There was a distinct whine in his voice, but also a note of reproach. Jupiter would have been annoyed, except Kane was so naturally deferential to her. Even if, to be honest, That was a big part of his charm. She thought it was a good thing he was getting confident enough to express petty displeasure. "Yeah, sorry about that," Jupiter said, giving an embarrassed shrug.
"But you nearly got seen."
"That would have been easily remedied," Kane pointed out.
"I told the caretakers no more brain wipes,"
Jupiter reminded him.
"Especially not for my family. They've been through enough. And besides, who knows if those things cause brain cancer or something?"
"I am sorry," Kane repeated. "But it's urgent. You may be in danger."
"Well, that was just great."
"How much danger?" Jupiter asked, because details were important. Kane made a face that was impossible to interpret through a layer of smudged glass and upside down.
"We're not sure yet. Maybe a lot."
"Kane, what is going on?"
The man sighed and heaved his shoulders, which looked truly remarkable given his current position.
"The Aegis have been investigating the Abraxas refinery. They haven't recovered much, but they did find something."
Jupiter felt a cold, hard lump form in the pit of her stomach. It was a familiar feeling. With it came the little mean voice that whispered in the back of her head, saying, "Good things never last. This is why you can't have a nice life. Something always goes wrong."
"What did they find, Kane?"
"The body of Balaam Abraxas. Or what was left of it."
"Oh." Jupiter blinked in surprise, as she felt the cold, hard lump get an unexpected fracture.
"Well, that was all right. Unless..."
"I didn't kill him," she said, even though she'd said as much to Captain Tsing. Repeatedly.
"I wouldn't have minded if you did," Kane said, heartfelt, but he took her meaning. "That's not the trouble. Since his death is now confirmed, there will be proceedings. Legal things. To do with inheritance."
"Oh," said Jupiter, her heart sinking. Had Balaam named an heir? Was she going to have to fight for Earth all over again? Was she going to have to go through the nightmare of Orus again?
"It seems Balaam did not make a will," Kane was saying, "so all his assets will pass to you."
"Oh," said Jupiter. It was all she really could say.
"I am told it's a lot. Worth a lot, I mean," Kane explained. "It raises the chances that you might encounter some..." We had a word for it. Let me think. "Right. Unsolicited attention. From people who wish to share in your... good fortune."
"You mean suitors?"
Jupiter said, forgetting, for a moment, to keep her voice low. She went on in a hissing whisper.
"Like more creeps wanting to marry me?"
"That is the most likely possibility. Stinger didn't think it was worth upping your security detail, but I thought it would be better if... well, if I was..."
"If you were close by to drop kick off the planet anyone who turned up to bother me. Or my family."
Jupiter's brain had supplied her with several scenarios in which Kane had arrived at her horrible, terrible, no good, rotten... almost wedding, 5 minutes later. She'd rather enjoyed all of them, so the fact that Kane had thought this information worth revealing himself to her mom was actually a little charming now. A little. "Kane, I don't really think anyone is gonna propose to me while I'm changing someone's dirty sheets." Kane didn't look convinced, and, after a moment's thought, Jupiter relented. "Okay, you're right. Some people would totally do that. And scare my mom a lot more than you would have. Thanks for the heads up. You can go, I don't know, guard the front door?" Kane looked helpless.
"Which one is that?"
"The big red one. It's got a green awning over it that says Biltmore in fancy yellow letters." Kane nodded and dropped out of sight. A flash of dark feathers against the bright sky. A moment later, his voice spoke, still in her ear.
"Keep your button in."
Kane was still standing guard dutifully outside the front door when they drove off. He'd put on his uniform jacket so his wings were hidden, and looked like someone's hired muscle.
Which he was, in fact, just not for the person any of the passerby might have guessed. It made Jupiter smile. He was also standing guard outside the front door of their next house, a residential up along the far north side, when they arrived, and looked horrendously out of place. Only here he looked more like some gang member casing a joint, and Aunt Nino drove around the block 3 times hoping he would leave before they gave up and parked across the street, hurrying them past him and into the house like a string of scared mice. "Try someplace less conspicuous," Jupiter hissed into her button ear thing. "You're probably scaring the neighbors, too."
"Sorry," came the response.
5 minutes later, she started up the stairs to the second floor to find Kane crouching at the top of them. "No, no, no," said Jupiter, herding him into the nearest bathroom and closing the door behind them. "This will freak them out even more."
"I will take every precaution not to be seen," he assured her earnestly.
It was touching, but comical. He was so big he took up almost half the room. "No, no," repeated Jupiter, pulling on her gloves. "You stay in here. They won't touch the bathrooms, so no worries. And you can stay in here after I'm done." Kane looked deeply unhappy about this, but he obligingly knelt on the towel she laid down so he wouldn't get the floor dirty, and kept moving whenever he got in her way. It was annoying, having to work around him, but Jupiter found it was also pleasant to have him nearby while she worked. The sound of his breathing, deep, strong breaths interspersed with little sighs, and the way he settled into the space was oddly relaxing. He was still alert, but not tense, and if Kane wasn't worried, Jupiter figured she shouldn't be either. Then she had to move on to the next room. "No, you stay in here," she hissed, maneuvering herself and her caddy out the door before he could follow.
"But," Kane began to protest.
"Kane," she said, resorting to what she was coming to think of as her animal trainer voice. "Stay." Kane stopped and looked at her with something like panic. "It's all right," she reassured him. "Just stay in here. I'll have my button on. You can talk to me any time. Can you do that?" Kane gave one of his full-body sighs that made his massive shoulders heave.
"Yes," he said, as though he was agreeing to sleep in a puddle of cold water.
Jupiter leaned back into the room. "Good boy," she whispered. Kane's head jerked up, and he stared at her, a flash of eagerness in his eyes. "Stay," Jupiter reminded him, and backed out, closing the door behind her. It worked. Kane stayed in the bathroom while she finished her work, and was nowhere to be seen when they left, much to Aunt Nino's relief. He was, however, lurking behind the chimney of Cousin Vasily's house when they pulled in that evening, but Jupiter only noticed the telltale shadow down by the roofline because she was half expecting it by that point. It made for a somewhat distracting dinner, since Jupiter kept worrying that Kane would take it into his head to come and hide on the stairs or something. As a result, she ate as fast as she could, hoping to get away and have a proper talk with him, and still get to bed at a reasonable hour. Her mother noticed, and when she elbowed Jupiter in the side, it was with a smile. "So, Jupiter," she said, "do you have a date tonight, too?" With an effort, Jupiter ripped her mind off, wondering what other assets she'd be landed with thanks to Balaam's death. Slaves, maybe? Or more planets? She really needed to talk to Kane. "What? No, actually. But I'm seeing him tomorrow afternoon," she added. That had been the deal they'd struck. Kane checked in with her every evening, and Jupiter took Friday afternoons off so they could fly into the city. Lately, they'd been alternating between flying practice for her and sampling different restaurants for Kane, who had apparently been subsisting on flavorless protein rations for his entire life. "Ah, that is good," her mother was saying. "Good to have something in your life. Something to look forward to. Your Aunt Nino now, she says I need something like that in my life." Jupiter felt her eyes going wide. "Mom, you're not..." "No, I am not seeing nobody," her mom announced. "But Nino is taking me to her astrology circle tonight." A glance across the table showed her Aunt Nino grinning and nodding eagerly around mouthfuls of borscht. We might not be back until 9, her mother added in an ominous undertone. Make sure the coffee is extra strong tomorrow morning. Which was how Jupiter ended up alone in the bedroom, miracle of miracles, when the window opened and 6 feet of Wolfman, wings and heavy boots, rolled through and onto the floor, coming up to a graceful kneeling position at her feet.
Majesty,
he whispered, ducking his head. It was how he always greeted her when they met, but the current position made it more like a supplication than ever. It did strange things to Jupiter's stomach, made it feel hot and tight and hugely powerful at the same time.
You're in luck, she said, dryly, trying to get the feeling under control. My mom and Aunt Nino are out on the town tonight, so we can actually have privacy, provided we keep it quiet.
Kane raised his head to gaze at her, his face carefully blank.
Keep what quiet? He asked.
Jupiter had to struggle not to roll her eyes again, or sigh. Kane was remarkably obtuse when it came to anything regarding sexual intimacy. She'd had to spell out, in excruciating detail, what the Earth standards were for sex, and by the time she'd finished, they were both so uncomfortable that any possibility of fitting the action to word was ruled out. Between this and the limited moments of privacy they shared, and despite the frequent displays of casual affection they exchanged, there had been precious little progress beyond kissing. Once she'd gotten him to grope her breasts through her shirt, it had felt like winning an Olympic medal. Now, however, she was simply too tired to lead him into anything he didn't already feel comfortable with, which would consist of sitting and talking and making out. Which was, surprisingly, all right with her, she realized. Considering some of her previous partners, okay, most of her previous partners, had thought of sex as something they were entitled to, no matter how exhausted she was, Kane's restraint was a heaping relief. Nothing, she said, smiling. Just talk quietly.
Of course, he replied, his voice a soothing rumble.
So, what exactly did you mean by further assets? She asked, going over to her bureau and pulling out her pajamas. I'm not getting any more planets, am I?
I don't think so, said Kane,
swiveling so he could keep her in sight, but otherwise not leaving his position on the floor. He was sitting right next to her mom's laundry hamper, and the contrast between her soft flannel shirts and his black leather uniform was hilarious.
Stinger has the complete manifest, but it is mostly his personal effects. Retainers, a few slaves, a lot of capital.
Lovely, said Jupiter, stripping out of her work clothes and pulling on the pajamas. She didn't bother to check Kane's reaction, though in her peripheral vision she thought she saw his shoulders tense.
Most of the living assets will need to be signed over to you in person, he went on, the strain in his voice barely discernible. They are being assembled at Stinger's farm, for lack of a better place.
Ah, said Jupiter, turning out the overhead and shuffling back to her bed, where she switched on the nightlight. It showed Kane, still kneeling where he'd landed, but looking studiously down at his hands now. Well, that's probably a good idea, she said. I suppose I can beg some time off next week and go take care of things.
That would be best, said Kane,
chancing a glance up and holding her gaze when he found her safely covered in plaid cotton. He started to rise.
I shall post myself on the roof at night until then.
Wait, stay, said Jupiter, crossing the short distance between them and putting a hand on his shoulder. She'd meant it as a gentle gesture, a mere suggestion. It was laughable to think she could physically hold Kane down or stop him from doing anything, really. But he froze under her touch as if her hand commanded the weight of mountains. The sight of his massive shoulder, made even larger by the presence of his wing, stilling under her hand, caused the hot, tight feeling to grow inside her again. Lazily this time, but still there, still powerful. Like she was, like he made her. Stay, she repeated, and he looked up at her, his face full of carefully guarded hope,
It was impossible not to smile.
Here, she said, moving her hand around so it settled at his throat, where the clasp of his coat lay. Let's get this off you. He was malleable under her hands, as she undid the fastenings and gently eased the garment off his shoulders, over his wings, before obediently pulling his arms free when prompted. Now the hot, tight feeling had grown to a veritable fire, rising up so it filled her throat, warming her head like a double shot of whiskey. She wanted to gently strip him out of all his clothes, lay him out on the floor, and ride him until the sun came up. And the really intoxicating thing was, she was pretty sure he'd let her. Not just suffer it to be done, either. He'd go happily, willingly, with the same look of disbelieving wonder that was currently plastered across his face. But she was also tired. There was a tightness behind her eyes that told her if she didn't get to bed soon, she would fall where she stood. So instead, she took his hands and guided him over to her bed, where he sat and she lay, resting her legs across his lap. "You can take those off, too, if you want," she said, plumping her pillow so she could look up at him. When he just looked bemused, she toed the waistline of his pants with one foot for illustration. He looked down at once. It was difficult to tell in the dim light, but she thought he might be blushing. "Unless you're commando under those and you're not comfortable with being completely naked," she added, realizing how vulnerable that situation might make him feel. "No, it's not," he began, then stopped, gave her an awkward, sideways glance, and then went on. "I do wear Under Armour. It's not the pants, it's the boots." Jupiter was too tired to even be surprised at this point. She just raised an eyebrow. "The boots?" Kane nodded. "They are complicated." "Right, gravity surfing boots." She knew his pair were not quite the same as the ones she'd been learning on. Hers had controls embedded in the soles, which made their repertoire of abilities somewhat limited. Kane's, she'd noticed, could do twice the number of tricks and had more circuitry embedded in them. They probably had a cybernetic jack similar to his wings, which allowed him to control them as though they were additional appendages. That would make taking them off and on more time-consuming. She was so tired she could only laugh. "Okay, then," she said, raising her knee so she could press it against his side, nudging him to lie down next to her. "Just try to keep them off the bed."
"Of course, Your Majesty."
His voice, his real, warm breath, caressing her ear as he went willingly to spoon at her side. A moment later, one of his arms pressed like a band of heat across Jupiter's midsection. She let out a contented sigh, and then carefully repositioned the arm so that the hand at the end of it was resting on her breast. Much better. The fingers twitched slightly, and she pushed back against the pressure.
"Sorry,"
Kane whispered.
"No, it's okay," she murmured back.
The way they were intertwined, she was practically sitting on one of his massive thighs, her legs across his lap and her right side pressed against his torso. With a little maneuvering, she managed to snake her right arm under his neck so she could loop it around and caress his exposed ear, gently cupping her hand and rubbing the delicate, curved tip. Unlike the rest of him, this was cold, and as it warmed under her fingers, she felt his whole body sort of melt against hers.
"You're a good boy," she mumbled, now with her eyes shut and sinking fast.
She felt the shudder that raced through him, from neck to leg and down the arm across her, culminating in a faint squeeze of the hand cupping her breast. Hot breath washed over her neck and ear, and a warm mouth moved, so close to her skin she felt the brush of his lips.
"If Your Majesty desires anything," he said,
and she could feel the rumble in his chest as he spoke.
"You need only say."
Oh, there were so many things she desired, Jupiter thought, a little petulantly. But even the prospect of actual sex with an actual Angel Wolf super soldier boyfriend was not enough to rouse her. She pulled his head close, turned her own, and kissed him, feeling his mouth yield to her, opening so sweetly she couldn't help but lick inside to taste him.
It still sent shivers down her spine. How he was so warm and rich and earthy, and yet also had a strange edge, like tasting ozone. "Just stay," she whispered into his mouth. "Stay." His left arm, until then unnoticed, now made its way under her shoulder, so he could reach back and cradle her head with his hand. Without any more pressure, he leaned in and kissed her back. As always, tentative at first, until she moaned with pleasure, and then his mouth was a crushing force against hers, devouring her tongue and sliding his own against it, filling her mouth with the taste of him, thick and pungent and just a little tingly. Her head would have been forced back at an uncomfortable angle under the onslaught, but his hand held her, soft against her hair but firm as iron.
"I will stay," he said, only a little breathless, some time later.
Was all Jupiter could manage. But then she smiled and added, "That's a good boy." No shudder this time, but a contented sigh and a wash of warmth as he tucked his head under her chin, his beard gently brushing against her clavicle. In their tangle, the blankets had gotten thrust aside, but before the chill could descend, Jupiter heard a whisper of feathers, and a soft weight settled on her chest, wrapping her in a little of the heat from the body pressed up against her side. She was utterly exhausted, and utterly surrounded and protected, and 2 minutes later, she was utterly asleep.